Oh, the thumb. The thumb is here.
Thumb is up.
All right, we're going to start today with a clip.
Okay.
Because AOC was talking to Alana Glazer, mm-hmm. who's some avatar of awful millennial feminism. She was
You didn't like Broad City?
No, I did. She was kind of funny.
Yeah, she's cool.
Her views on whether billionaires should exist are not so great.
No.
AOC, well, let's play the clip.
There's a certain level of wealth and accumulation that is unearned, right? You can't earn $1 billion.
That's right.
You just can't earn that.
That's exactly correct.
You can get market power. You can break rules. You can do all sorts of things. You can abuse labor laws.
Yep.
You can pay people less than what they're worth.
Yep.
But you can't earn that, right?
That's right.
And so you have to create a myth that, since you didn't earn that, you have to create a myth of earning it.
Do-do-do-do-do. We played the clip, I think. That's how that works.
Yeah.
AOC there saying, you know, billionaires produce no value.
Right, right. It's you can't earn $1 billion.
Right.
Stress on earn.
She's just doing labor theory of value, right? Because nothing on earth is worth $1 billion
no.
to her, so it would be impossible for anyone to actually be worth $1 billion.
No, it's actually worse than that. She's not even doing labor theory of value, because there are people who, like, through their labor have earned $1 billion. Like, people are bringing up the example of Taylor Swift or other famous performers. Yeah, right.
Michael Jordan.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to some extent these people own, like, IP or brands or whatever.
Right.
So
but they created IP the IP.
Right, right.
Not just the manager of the IP.
Right, so they are fabulously successful wage laborers.
Right.
Right? But she's like, you just, like, literally $1 billion is It's not something you can earn, and therefore, when it's described as earning, it's actually kind of like, her point is kind of like communist psychobabble, because I wrote an article it's up on the website.
Oh, you wrote an article.
I know, can you believe that?
It's 11:30. You got up and worked this morning.
Yeah. Can you believe that? Yeah. Well, because I'm not the one who's hungover this morning.
I was late for work because I drank too much champagne. Oh.
But anyway, we are also, hardworking wage laborers. We're not part of the billionaire class.
No.
But no, it's like kind of like communist psychobabble. She's like, oh, you've internalized your own failures. That's, you know, capitalism is telling you that's a lack of effort on your part, when really it's the billionaires ripping everyone off through wage theft, which she says is the most prevalent form of theft in the economy, which is complete fucking nonsense. I had to go. She is not smart.
No.
She's
for leftists, she's not smart.
No, it's nothing but like pablum and
yeah.
a half remembered fact. That's
yeah.
that's all it is. So when this clip of her talking to Alana Glazer went viral, she had a long ex post defending herself. And it included this figure that there's $50 billion a year in wage theft in the economy, which is an absurd overestimate. So the Department of Labor, which reclaims like minimum wage violations or violations of the Fair Labor Standards Act or whatever, they bring in about $250 million a year in wage theft mm-hmm. claims. The states get another $750 million. So that's the starting figure. The $50 billion figure comes from these like lefty orgs who estimate, like, they do surveys of like, did your boss, you know, make you, you know, take 20 minutes instead of 30 minutes for lunch or whatever. Okay, so let's add up the
right.
dollars that would count, and then we'll add that to the wage labor figure. So it's like kind of absurd, right? But then also it's like you're comparing it against like actual FBI crime statistics of the value of like larceny and property theft. But you're not asking like employers, like, how much did you lose from time theft of employees? Like,
right.
Not like slacking
well, right.
on the job.
And we should go first to the philosophy and the psychology of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who is our God here?
Well, okay.
Our secular saint Rand would say this is all made up anyway.
Yes.
Because you don't, it's consenting behavior between adults.
Yes.
The employer says, I want some service done. This is what I'm willing to pay
yes.
for it.
Mm-hmm.
You say, I will provide some service. This is what I want to be compensated for. You have some agreement. The employer consents to it. You consent to the terms of it. If you don't like it, you don't have to do it. If they don't like it, they don't have to pay you.
Yeah.
And so there's no, again, this is why I say it's labor theory of value on some level, because you're not, it's not worth, work is not worth some inherent amount of money.
Right.
It's just what someone else is willing to pay for it.
Right.
Things don't have inherent value. It's just what someone else is willing to pay for it. If we're willing to pay Taylor Swift $1 billion, she's worth $1 billion.
Right.
If we're not willing to pay her anything, she's worth nothing. There's no, that's just how it's all subjective.
It's also this, yeah, so it's a false labor theory of value.
Right. But it took me a lot of effort to make that. My catalog of CDs. Doesn't matter. No one wants to buy Robbie CDs.
No, it doesn't matter.
Unfortunately. Doesn't matter how much effort I put into it.
Right.
And I like to think we put a lot of effort into what we do.
Oh, showing absolutely.
Showing up hungover half an hour late, but it's not worth $1 billion, even though I think it should be. I really think it should be, but it's
too
not.
Bad. Right. That's the starting point of the negotiations, and they whittled us down.
When we walk into year-end reviews with Catherine, right. I'm worth $1 billion, Catherine Mangu Ward.
Zimbabwean, maybe. Yeah. But so it's labor theory value, but then it's also just like the pile of money fallacy that like
right.
there's the trillions of dollars over here
right.
that the billionaires somehow hoarded for themselves.
Right. In their wearing their top hats and they got their money. Like, right. They're swimming Scrooge McDuck
right.
style through the pile of gold. Doesn't exist.
No, through like organizing massive industrial conglomerates to produce things for pennies, pennies a widget.
Right.
They have created fabulous amounts of wealth, which we then all benefit from. What's the right. Joseph Schumpeter quote about the triumph of capitalism is not that the queen can afford more silk stockings, but that the factory girl can buy more of them for increasingly less effort, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's capitalism. That's good. That's where the billionaires get their money from. That's where we get our silk stockings from, or you do at least.
Oh, the better for tying around the throats of my victims.
No, very good. Yes. Very good. Yeah.
Yes. No, I'm only a person of interest in most of those cases. What she's
confidential
really,
informant.
Sure. What she's really trying to do is set up a limit to which any wealth above this line
is
de facto
yeah. mm-hmm.
illegitimate,
right.
so that it can be so that she
can confiscate it. So she can steal. She can steal from you. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. This is on some level the lefty worldview.
It's
making something that people value that much
yeah.
is stealing from them.
And so therefore
the government
we must steal.
Taking from
we must steal it back
to give to others is not stealing.
Yeah, this is another point I make. So if you look at the wider context of her comment, she's talking about how this is a myth we've created that they've earned this money, right? No. She is creating a myth to justify
right.
rank exploitation and theft.
Right.
Talks about wage theft, $50 billion in wage theft. Let's even assume that that's true. How about the fucking $4 trillion of income tax and payroll tax taken from the paychecks of working Americans, hardworking Americans like me and Cody?
Income tax fucking sucks.
It sucks.
It sucks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hate it.
Yeah, I know. I already complained about it, but that's what this whole organization yeah. is here to do. So we're yeah. going to keep complaining about
yeah,
it.
That's right, we are. Yeah. Nobody likes it.
No, no one likes that. Yeah, it's like, you know, Alana Glazer, she's a rich and successful comedian.
Yeah, good
you know,
for
she
her.
doesn't make $1 billion like Taylor Swift does, but
yeah.
by any sort she of historical, fine. Global, national standard, she is a rich son of a bitch, right?
Right.
And to like, so there's like this kind of like intra-elite envy status.
Yes.
It's
well, this
unbecoming.
Is the new thing. This is the new phenomenon for Democrats. It's millionaires hating billionaires.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
Noah Smith,
what it
I
is.
Saw made that point.
Because they're, increasingly, their coalition is wealthy white people, old wealthy white people who want total boomer luxury communism.
Right.
Who, you know, are getting tennis and golf lessons paid for by you and I.
Right.
And that's all hunky dory.
Yeah.
But and look, people, rich people can make, just to be clear, you know, if any lefty watches this and be like, oh, these are simps for, you know, billionaires, and people can make money illegitimately.
Of course.
And they do, and that's bad.
As
and we're against the rules, we're against manipulation of the, I mean, often when they're making it illegitimately, it's because they're benefiting from some government policy that they have lobbied for that harms their competition, right?
Yeah.
Which we're totally against.
And in a world of, you know, taxation and regulatory incentives and state granted privileges, like everyone is both kind of ripping off the system and doing some level of productive work. Yeah. Elon Musk makes some good cars. He also benefits from tax credits for electric vehicles and clean air.
Which he says we shouldn't have, but as long as we have them, he's going to benefit from them.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough, right?
Yeah.
As I said in my article, there's moochers on every rung of the income ladder, you know?
Right, some people always try to dunk on our girl because she was getting Social Security at the end of the... Well, she paid into it her whole life.
Yeah, and also it's kind of difficult to not accept Social Security.
Right. You have to set the check on fire. Yeah.
And also, like, Reed Atlas shrugged, like, a lot of the villains are fabulously wealthy themselves.
Yeah.
They are just benefiting from state monopolies
right.
where the hardcore competitors are, you know.
They're doing the kind of hijinks that you've used to enrich yourself over the weeks we've been doing this podcast, setting up fake charities in mm-hmm. Somalia, mm-hmm. Trying to become the Shah of Iran, trying right. to become the president of Venezuela, those things I keep putting your name on that are fraudulent. Why do you keep letting me do that?
Right.
And you never say thank you.
Yeah. And we'll see, this is a great example of a labor theory of value being false. You've put in all the effort. And
right.
And yet I'm reaping all the
and
rewards.
And you're reaping all the ill-gotten gains.
Well, I tried to earn an
Why
honest...
Why do I do it?
I tried to earn an honest buck importing, you know, drugs into the country, and they blew up my boat. So,
God damn it.
Yeah. Give me that.
Speaking of boats that need to be blown up.
Oh, this hantavirus boat. Oh.
I will feel better when that is at the bottom of the Atlantic.
Yeah.
It's like off the coast of the Canary Islands right now. That's a little too close for comfort.
Yeah.
It's in the Atlantic, gotta go. Gotta go.
It's very scary because hantavirus, this is, so you get it from basically when mice feces are aerolized or whatever.
At least it's not gay sex this time. Finally, we get a bit of a break.
Right, yeah. Monkeypox. That was hard for a lot in the community.
Yeah.
But
must purge toxic from community.
It is a terrifying disease because unlike COVID, which has a very low fatality percentage, hantavirus,
pretty lethal.
A third of people die.
It's not very contagious, though.
It's not contagious. It's not very contagious.
But
at
you
all.
Know, Dr. Fauci is at work in some lab as we speak, going, "How do we get this fucker to be more contagious? How do we up? These are rookie rates. Get that the R no. Get that up
in order to stop stop the virus. Yeah. We must spread the virus.
Those are rookie numbers.
Yeah. It is terrifying, though. This is what Gene Hackman's wife died of, a very rare case of hantavirus. Yeah, I think there's only been like 30 deaths from hantavirus in like the past couple decades.
Let's keep it that way.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. Yeah, it's something that does concern or has concerned me in the past because like if you've ever had like, you know, you live in the old units here in D.C. and you have mice
or whatever. Oh, you've lived in rat-infested filth time and time again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm they are rolling around.
You're a little
in
like
it.
Charlie from It's Always Sunny kind of existence.
Yeah, right.
The Rat King.
I just got to get some cats and put them in the wall. And
That's a logical thing to do.
Yeah. Well, that's how you kill hantavirus. Is you smoke and it kills the
really
the germs. Yeah.
All right.
Smoking and drinking. Yeah.
Well, then we're fine. We're all set then. So I think this is a fake scare, really. I don't think it's going to become a big thing, but any COVID story, relevant storyline, it's
everyone's
like,
primed to
let's
worry
just
about
not.
It now.
Mm-hmm. I saw a funny meme of like liberals when they find out hantavirus, the boys are back. Yes. Mask up. Yes. Yeah.
It's
well, so Lindsay on Rising was trying to drag me for saying that I favored like quarantining this ship. She's like, oh, but I thought you're against all COVID mitigation measures. I'm like, no, I'm not against like for demonstrably sick and infected people.
Right.
It is fine for the government to quarantine them. What I objected to during COVID, and I frankly supported the initial when we had to, they basically said, everybody stop moving, don't see anyone because we have to prepare our hospitals to receive an onslaught of patients for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that sounds reasonable.
Yeah.
But then it was they pulled the rug away and it was,
we're
going to do
this
forever.
This is the entire strategy, right?
And I don't think the government, philosophically, I don't support the government doing invasive society level interventions for people, most of whom are presumably not ill or infected.
And most of whom...
Like just prophylactically.
Most of whom who do get infected and do get ill
are fine.
Will not die.
Right.
Yes. This is not
like if it's raining, I take an umbrella. I don't just have an umbrella all the time, even when there's no chance of rain.
Right. And certainly we would oppose a government requirement that everyone have hoist an umbrella all the time.
Well,
right.
If it saves one, you know, person's hair from being messed up by the rain, why not do it? That was the logic.
There's the socialist science fiction writer from like turn of the century, Bellamy. He had a book about how
I've never heard of him.
It's for the best, but he had a story about you know how like the new metropolis is going to be organized under socialist principles, and instead of the foolish individualism of the umbrella, we were just going to have awnings that span the entire street.
Oh, socialist, man.
Yeah.
We're really beating up on them today.
Yeah. Is there anything, did you want to say anything about a right winger just real quick? I can't think of one I don't really like. So.
Did we talk about the James Comey thing being stupid last week? I don't remember.
That's stupid. 86-47.
That is stupid. Yeah. Lock that door. Cody, we're going to have to shoot our way out of this because the feds are going to come busting in.
Yeah.
No, Kash Patel is going to spend like 8,000 man hours putting together a case against you, I guess.
Right.
That was the stupidest thing ever.
Right.
It's so stupid.
And they're apparently sitting on some great evidence that he really meant it.
Seashells.
Yeah. And it takes a lot to get me to sympathize with James Comey, who I find a generally loathsome and self-aggrandizing individual, but...
Oh, I know we can talk about that makes kind of right people, some of them not so great. I mean, this is a debate going on the right. The whole heritage versus creed Americans thing. I want to talk about that.
Oh, right.
Because Nick Gillespie of Reason did a great interview with Justice Neil Gorsuch.
Of the Supreme Court?
Of the very same.
Yeah.
Someone a lot of us of a libertarian sensibility generally like and appreciate. He's got some good, you know, they're all interesting individuals. Mm-hmm. They don't all vote the way we want to all the time, but he's one of the good ones, I think. Mm-hmm. I like him. I always say...
He's in my top 10 of Supreme Court justices.
When they're going to add another Supreme Court justice, I'm like, fuck that. Let's just give Gorsuch a second vote.
Yeah.
That's what I think. So he, you know, said that... And a lot of... you know, this is a standard Reagan-era stuff. It's suddenly controversial that anyone can become America. America is a creed. America, you can't become a Frenchman. You can't become a... Britain, but you can become an American. Anyone who shares our values and wants to see our country flourish and appreciates our Declaration of Independence and our Bill of Rights and our constitutional system can be an American.
Yep.
And it's a positive vision, and it's good and it's inspiring.
Provided you were born here, that's completely fine.
But yeah, a faction of the right then loves to dunk on that for some reason. That's the creed Americans view, and they're coming from the heritage Americans view, which is like, no, America is not just an idea. America is a physical place, and its institutions were founded by a very specific, formerly British, white Western Christian aristocracy, and that was vital to our founding conditions. And of course, the answer is these things are both true. Yes,
yeah,
obviously,
right.
That is
what is the conflict?
That was the origin of our country, and I don't want to. I have zero interest in denying the Christian or Western or Anglo aspects of our founding. Yes, those were important things. I think reducing it to that, you know, misses some kind of interesting distinctions about who the early Americans were. And right, the people in Maryland, it was Catholics. It was the Scotch-Irish in Pennsylvania. It was the Quakers. That, like, there are more interesting differences here than they're talking about.
There were
black slaves that were brought here.
And the very serious divisions between these people that we kind of have forgotten now.
Yes.
But like, the you know, Episcopalians and the, you know, high church Anglicans being at each other's throats,
right,
just like ready to tear each other apart,
right,
except for the Enlightenment libtards who founded the country and wrote the Declaration of Independence. Are like, we're gonna not do that.
It's a little woke and critical race theory-y to say, oh, that's all white people,
yeah,
right? Frankly, I find that that's kind of a progressive thing to say. Well, those are all whites, so it's a they didn't view themselves that way, and this is a concept you've invented this concept now and are retroactively describing them as that. That's something I tend to associate with sweeping racial white versus marginalized peoples, a simplicity being foisted onto our history by critical race theorists. So it's funny that on some level, the Heritage Americans are adopting that. But yes, okay, these are the characteristics of our founding, and that was very important. And also the creed is important, and these things are both important.
And the creed can kind of transcend the particular ethnic or religious background.
Because we want to get, because the fact is, we have people today in this country from all over the world, from all different walks of life. We've absorbed immigrants from all these different places, and we want the creed. We don't want to say, "Well, sorry, this is just a country really for Anglicans."
Right.
Which is a stupid thing to say anyway. So even if you believe the creed, you're not really one of us.
Yeah, because you're...
How is that helpful? Right. Why do we want to do that?
Right.
And then they'll throw at me. I was having this... I pointed this out to Rufo. I said this to something like this to Rufo. And then either he responded or someone else responded, well, Liberia disproves the creed because Liberia was founded with our exact creed and it's a dysfunctional place. Okay, but... Modern Japan was founded with our creed, and it's a highly functioning place. Right. And so is Israel. Right. Like, they're right. It is true that the creed is not sufficient on its own, but it is also a great and aspirational thing that can, that, like, people who are not just Christian Anglicans can found a nice society with the creed. It has succeeded before. There are examples of succeeding.
Right.
So I just don't know what they're out to prove.
Yeah, I mean, there is certainly a statism that can come from asserting that America is just an idea, not in the way that Heritage Americans assert, but like to say America is a creedal nation and, you know, it's an idea. So there, you know, does that mean we have to have ideological surveillance of what people believe in order for them to become Americans or whatever else? But they, I mean, the Heritage Americans would say yes, right? So in that way, they're kind of leaning into the idealism.
Yes.
And I don't think that's right. I mean, what is a nation? It's a hard thing to really pin down in concrete terms. I mean, the thing that I think gets it best, I think it's probably the best description of liberal nationalism beyond the Declaration of Independence, was an essay from a Frenchman, actually, Renan, called What is a Nation? And he talks about it as like this daily plebiscite of people agreeing to live together, which in my mind is, it's like, I don't know, you go overseas, and you come back and, you know, you're getting excited on the plane ride back to America. And it's not because you've read the Declaration of Independence on the plane, or it's not just because you've read the Declaration of Independence on the plane. It's because you're excited to go back to a place where just like things are familiar. You understand kind of the daily rhythms of life. You understand when you go into a store, what the reaction is going to be like, how to deal with your fellow citizen person in the country, right? There's that comfort and familiarity that makes a nation too. And that's kind of it's on a more subterranean level than just high-minded Declaration of Independence or complete, you know, racial abstraction, I guess is what these guys are getting at, blood and soil nationalism either. But I mean, I feel like that's just as important to defining what America's all about. And you don't need to, you know, completely buy a conservative interpretation of the Declaration of Independence or a progressive interpretation or whatever else to believe that and live as an American. And I just like, what is the problem that they're pointing out here too? Like, where is the giant social disconnect of different values that is tearing us apart by us not being heritage Americans?
Well, I mean, to be fair, I think there's a conflict of values in this country and there are people with status values that I don't agree with at all. And I resent how much influence an AOC or an Alana Glaser have over the say of who gets to keep their own money. But that is not a foreign-born threat
It started here. Right, yeah.
That's the thing they're making the most. They're presenting a situation where, in their mind, and then we'll solve this by just closing this off, just being a country for white, WASP-descended people.
Everything bad in America is a foreign import.
Right, but WASP, a lot of WASP-descended people are socialists, man, are like running the Ivy League.
Exactly.
Biggest haters of America there are. And a lot of them aren't. But it's not reducible to their proximity to the Mayflower, right? I mean, there's, you know, I want Javier Milei and Vivek Ramaswamy as citizens. Their views on economics very closely align with mine.
Yeah.
I don't want... You know, whoever, some Ivy League person who can trace their roots back to the Mayflower, who's probably wants social, you know,
the wokery,
Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, the wokery of the New Deal and the Great Society and even Bernie Sanders is like
Elizabeth Warren. She's a native. She was her people were on this soil before America was founded in wigwams and teepees.
Right, exactly.
That's the real heritage American, and I don't want that.
No, the descendants of the like Mayflower pilgrims are like the elitist managerial libs who are causing all our problems.
Yeah.
So
basically, yes.
So I really don't understand this critique.
I don't either.
And this was not something that was controversial 10 years ago. Right. And also, what is. I wish they would be a little more upfront then about describing what exactly is required of being a heritage American. They're always dancing around that a little bit, right? Rufo, you know, because you got the vowel in your last name.
He's one of my people. He's an Italian.
Yeah.
I always bring this up.
Is he Catholic?
He's, I believe, Catholic, yeah.
Okay, yeah. See, we wouldn't count as heritage Americans. Right. People didn't like us here.
I think he's married to an Asian woman.
Yeah, wow. So she counts as a heritage American, right? And if she does because she accepts particular values, well, there's that fucking creed again. Yeah.
Right.
Doing a lot of work, actually.
And it just seems so obvious that we would want, like, if people love America and want to share in our values and want to make the country more prosperous by participating in it in a civil, economic way, that is a good thing that we shouldn't turn them away because they weren't. Born, their ancestors didn't come here 200 years ago.
Right. Yeah.
It's kind of stupid to say, well, we'd really love you to be a part of this country, but sorry, you're not.
Got here
Josiah.
A little too late. Got here a little too late. Yeah.
Like, it's just stupid.
It's ridiculous.
It's just stupid. Yeah. This is why I can't, at the end of the day, take. So obviously there are we can scrutinize immigration on some level. I think we as libertarians who want a lot more immigration have to make. Some concession. I mean, because just the mood is so anti-immigration, we have to make
the
some
politics of it is very bad right
to,
now.
And I have to just say that when we're deciding who gets to come here, we do get to make because people who are not here yet are not protected by, you know, by the Bill of Rights because they're not here, so they're not subject to that. So we get to do some crude and generalizing. There are more criminals from here. We want less of this, but. The people who are obsessed with those differences just never contend themselves. They just always end up in a place of, we have to close off the whole country to anyone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, as a Kaplanite open borders advocate, I mean, I kind of reject the restrictions.
And that
generally.
Scheme is just so unpopular, though.
But I concede the like political practicality of there are going to be some immigration restrictions. So,
right.
Like, you know, I'm not going to fight the person who is 90% of the way there with me. And the politics of it are very bad right now. But in the same way that, like, the politics of getting rid of the welfare state are very bad right now.
Yeah.
And maybe that means you shouldn't just, like, press the button and get rid of it overnight.
Let it rip.
Yeah, let it rip.
Let that sucker go.
So, you know, you want to create, you know, part of being a responsible person, if you truly hold values, is to pursue them in a politically pragmatic way.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't lose sight of, you know, the core moral foundations of your worldview either.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not going to cede any ground to these. I'm not going to cede any blood or soil to these heritage Americans.
Fair enough. What else we got today? Let's talk about, this was a good one. Hmm. I did read it finally, and I wrote about it at reason.com. Discrimination filing against the New York Times. Did you see this?
Catch me up on this. I saw some of the
headlines,
and I find it funny.
This is a case of white male discrimination. Hmm. So first of all, there was some
who are the white males discriminating against this time?
No, they're the victims.
What?
There's just one guy.
Okay.
It's not a class action. It's one guy saying he was discriminated against at the Times, and this prompted a lot of funny lib commentary. Like New York Magazine had to be like, oh, look at those whining. They didn't literally say this, but the tone was very sneering. Mm-hmm. How could it be? Well, the editor is a white man, so I don't see how you can say they discriminate against white people. Well, the claim is they're being mass discriminated against. And also, you sound like, that's like, well, I have a black friend. I can't be racist. Right. They're basically doing that.
The police chief is black. Therefore, the cops can't be racist.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But again, it's not a claim of mass racial discrimination, it's a claim of one guy. But I always like to read the actual document, which is hard because why, and I complained about this on Twitter, but why do they never link to the document in any? So I read it, this was written about in the New York Times itself. Mm-hmm. Maybe they didn't want to link to it because it's against them and they're like, screw you, fine. Washington Post, Reuters, Axios, Intercept, no link to this document. I found it, or rather Peter Suderman found it for me, because I was just busy bitching about it. Yeah. He found it.
Had to navigate Pacer. That's its own civil rights
violation. I think he actually just asked ChatGPT to find it for him, and he did. Yeah. Finding it was not the hardest thing in the world, but it's just, why don't you link to things? Don't you want people to be able to read the firsthand?
It's incredibly frustrating.
Count on your crude summary of it, Axios. Sorry. Yeah. Smart brevity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Little less brevity, little more substance, maybe.
A little more smartness.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that?
You know who's actually really good at linking to primary documents is CNN. Their own internal standards are clearly like, you write about a bill, you link to the
good
bill.
Good on them. Yeah. Good for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. R.I.P. Makes us happy. Ted Turner.
Yeah. 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 Oh, yeah.
We'll touch on that. Yeah. Yeah. Please finish.
So I read it. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. And I would say the evidence that the New York Times did discriminate against this white male is somewhere between compelling and overwhelming. Mm. What's going to crucify them is their stated diversity plans. Mm. You know, year after year in the excesses of the woke period, 2020, 2021, 2022, 2023, they're publishing statements that we have too many white male senior leadership people. We need to replace them when positions open with multiracial candidates to the exclusion of white male candidates. Mm-hmm. Like, it says that in their plan of action.
Yeah.
So a editor position opens up for a real estate editor. I don't know what that does, but they saw a white male who worked for the New York Times. He basically applied.
And it's the real estate section.
Is that what they do? Mm-hmm. Thanks for that. I really could have used your help on this one.
As our housing beat reporter, you know, I'm always happy to oblige.
But is it like real estate listings, or it's just news about real estate?
You're writing about real estate, like the business of real estate.
Fine. Okay. Anyway, this guy wants a promotion, basically. And he has relevant experience in editing this kind of thing and writing about it. He doesn't even make the final round. There's a final round of, there's like four or five candidates. Mm. Every single one of them is multiracial or a woman. There's one white woman, an Asian man, and then a black woman and a mixed race woman.
Okay, it's like a car commercial.
There's no white guy and there's no him, even though he is more, on paper, more qualified than these people. Mm-hmm. And you could say, well, maybe he did a really bad job in his interview, I guess. But they have a document where basically the hiring manager said, oh, we're picking her before they even did the interviews, and her being the multiracial woman who has no relevant experience in this field whatsoever. Yeah. I frankly don't know what the standard of what the evidentiary standard would be in this kind of, if it's just burden of, if it's 15.
Oh yeah. Who has the, it's not clear.
I think it's cause it's a, this is going to be a civil action. Yeah. So it's,
well, it's a federal, right. It would be an administrative action. Right. Yeah.
So it's not clear and convincing. It's going to be preponderance.
And it's,
so they're cooked if it's preponderance.
In an EOC, I guess I'm familiar with the process, but this is one of those situations where it's like the agency brings the complaint, and then it's decided by like an administrative law judge within the agency.
I believe so.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good luck, New York Times. Yeah.
So they're going to lose this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we?
I mean, look, you're going to say, do we think this should be the case?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. Federal civil rights law says it is illegal in hiring and promoting and admissions and things. You can't discriminate on the basis of race and sex.
Yeah.
And if we can't discriminate on the basis of race and sex, you can't discriminate against someone because they're white.
Yeah.
It's not written to be a, we just lift up minorities. It is written to forbid discrimination on the basis of race. In a perfectly libertarian world, we would probably say that law shouldn't exist and a private employer should have the right to hire someone in a racist and discriminatory way, and then you have the right to condemn morally a company for doing that and not associate with them. And I can't imagine there would be all that much of that in today, because it would be embarrassing for them, and it would be just bad. It would also be bad. It would stop you from hiring the most qualified people.
Yeah.
But yes, in a perfectly libertarian world, we'd probably say for private contracting, yes. For public things, I would say it's fine. For the government should be restricted.
Yeah.
From doing
discrimination.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Just like on constitutional grounds,
for sure.
Even beyond like civil rights.
For
law,
sure.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah.
So that's what I'd say. But this, I think, this is a case. got to be careful too much about applying bad rules more. I think this is a case where...
And also bad process. If it is, in fact, like some sort of administrative law thing like that, that raises huge due process problems where the agency itself is judge, jury, and executioner.
I think this is a case where we have to, though, say...
I mean, this is the standard that we apply to everything.
In this way, if it's it would be in any other situation. It can't be... Well,
I agree.
Well, but, white man, so
right.
Ha-ha.
No, I completely agree. This would be a case for changing the law then.
Right.
And yeah, you know, I'm sure I pissed off some of the audience by saying we should have open borders, but I'll piss off the other half.
Yeah, win them back.
This, yeah,
the plight of white males in society.
Right. I think there's like a narrow case for certain types of anti-discrimination laws, just given America's history and like a certain pragmatism with trying to overcome the legacy of state-enforced racism, right? You got it. The hotel's got to rent to everyone who stops by, right?
Well, something like that. The hotel is a better example because, well, what I say to these things is show me an example first of a service not being met for of some need that's not be, like – no hotel in the town is going to let a black person stay there. Well, then that is a case for government intervention because that's a, you arrive in the town, you know, I mean, we're going back older times.
Yeah.
No one is going to admit you. There's no room at the end. That's a problem. That just doesn't exist. But they try to apply this to like, you know, the Christian bakery that doesn't want to make you a cake for your gay wedding.
Right.
Well, you'll have no problem contracting someone.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't have
Julio
to like
and
force someone to
Tristan
surrender their values,
to get,
right?
To get to cake for you.
Yeah, I mean, my own view is like if the Times wants to sacrifice some level of professionalism in the service of a more diversified like editorial management, they should be allowed to do that. Maybe you could say it makes for a worse paper, or that's just like wrong on its face. Okay, but. That should be that, you know, it's their private company. They should be allowed to do that should they wish. They're not allowed to do it currently. And I agree the law should be applied equally if we're going to have these laws.
Right.
But
it's interesting, though. But I don't know. I don't know how overwhelming the evidence has to be. I don't know if they have to also present emails where they're like, oh, white guy applied for this.
Right. Yeah.
Good luck, buddy.
Right.
But if that's the case, I don't know if they have those, but it would seem pretty damning.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, normally it's like you have some, if you have, I mean, at least I'm mostly familiar with like Fair Housing Act stuff, right? So even just like you don't even have to, under Fair Housing Act, you don't have to have any sort of intent to discriminate. It can just be a discriminatory effect.
Right.
And then once you establish a discriminatory effect, then you, as the federal regulations have changed on this, but at least the Trump administration is trying to change them. But if you establish some sort of discriminatory effect or disparate impact, then the business has to come and show the reason for why they must have, you know, have like the policy is race neutral and they have a solid business reason for producing this discriminatory effect, right? I don't know if it's a similar thing with employment law.
It's a similar thing with, well, when I used to do Title IX, I was talking to a friend of mine about my
Oh, and then there's a third step where it's like you've established
me?
Yeah, I am.
Oh,
yeah.
Right, go ahead.
Well, 'cause
go
people ahead. Are gonna learn something.
Go
people are gonna learn something.
Go ahead.
It's like, okay, I've established a neutral business reason for why we do this, but then there's like a third step of analysis where it's like, well, is this the most narrowly tailored version of this? Are you doing the most individual determinations as possible, right? So like HUD has put out regulatory guidance saying you can't just not rent to people who have a criminal record because that has a disparate impact. And you're like, well, you know, people who have a criminal record are, you know, not going to pay their rent or, you know, endanger other tenants. And you're like, okay, but like, did you actually like go through the individual process for each individual applicant and look at their criminal conviction and see whether or not that's going to be a problem or not, right? You have to do that third step. So it's a very demanding standard.
When you said a minute ago, the argument for this is the broader philosophical argument is remedying historical injustices.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is so interesting when you consider this in light of race-based admissions, which have now been basically forbidden by the Supreme Court, which is something I'm very much in favor of. But the interesting thing, the fascinating thing about this was that for that period where you had the Gratz and Grutter decisions in like the early aughts or the late 90s, somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like 20-year period where affirmative action, where race-based admissions in higher ed is allowed somewhat on a basis of, but up until that point, everyone defending them and using them and arguing for the legality of them was making the argument that you just made, well, we've mistreated people, black people, and we are making up for that, and this is how we boost them, and that is the purpose of doing that. And the Supreme Court, in its decision, went ruling on that and saying, we'll allow some race-based admissions, threw that argument out.
Yeah,
they said, nope. That's no good. But you can do it because diversity is beneficial to the educational environment for the other students.
Right.
The other students benefit from there being diversity.
Yeah.
So that's the reason you can have it. So then everyone who'd been arguing for this had to go, oh, and yes, that's what we were doing all along. We just cared about diversity. The issue is, so they had to do that because the Supreme Court said it. But that is a just objectively speaking a way worse argument for doing race-based admissions.
Yeah,
the making up for something bad that was specifically done to a specific group of people is just a far more compelling. I mean, the opponents of affirmative action recognize that that is just the better argument.
Mm-hmm.
The diversity canard was a terrible argument because it's pseudoscientific. It's not, well, what if they all are diverse in a very surface way? They look literally diverse, but it's all people from the same backgrounds. It's not, it's...
And it also doesn't benefit the students who don't get to go to the college because they were discriminated against.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
So that was, that was undone.
This is what's so crazy about so many of these like anti-discrimination rulings and principles is it's all about like what the public institutions' interests are, right? It's not about like justice for individuals or people who had been discriminated against in the past. It's again, it's like, well, what's best for the government agency?
Yeah.
What is their purpose and how can we facilitate their mission? So, yeah.
All right, let's
real sick stuff.
Real sick stuff. Let's talk about something fun. The Odyssey trailer. I know we've talked about the Odyssey before, but a lot of commentary because there's a longer trailer that came out today, and
people are
starting to be worried about this one.
So I was gonna watch it. I was about to see it, but then these fucking Greek scallywags poked my eye out, and I can't see anything.
Oh, that's funny. That's good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah.
And so I'm sitting there shouting like, "Who cast a black woman as Helen of Troy?" And they're like, "No one." Cast a black woman as
Oh my god. Yeah, I just have to see that. Some conservatives are so mad about. We talked about that one already. I'll see the movie.
Yeah.
And that's still what I'm saying about this. I love Christopher Nolan. I don't love every single movie he's made. I think Tenet is one of the worst movies I've ever had to suffer through.
Wow.
Did you see that one?
No, I didn't.
That's his one of What If the Bullets Goes Back Through Time.
Whoa.
It makes no sense. My brother disagrees with me on this. He listens to this, and I'm going to get a bunch of texts from him about why I'm wrong after I describe it. But that movie makes no sense at all. It's an insult to the human brain, that movie, because, you can reverse entropy and go back through time, but you just retrace the steps you just took. And it's like, it doesn't make any sense. And so at the end of the movie, the other character has been moving backward through time the whole movie. And there's some big fight between mercenary forces. And I have no idea who's fighting each other. Mm-hmm. Like literally no idea. I don't know who these mercenary people are. Mm-hmm. It's like borrowed from the Batman movies, like the Ra's al Ghul's people have just
League
showed
of
up.
Shadows.
They have just showed up for some reason. I have no idea why. And none of it makes any sense, and it's a terrible movie.
Okay.
It's such a bad movie. You also, every time, the few times in the movies where someone who knows something is going to explain what's going on, Christopher Nolan cranks up the bass and just, you know, the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and you can't hear the dialogue, and you can't see anything that's happening.
Right.
The long way of saying my concerns about Christopher Nolan are, man, does he like the background noise. It's dark and hard to see. My hearing is going. My sight is going. I can't see or hear things anymore in movie. Like it's too. Mm-hmm. I'm always like, is the brightness setting on my TV on max? Because I can't see it. Mm-hmm. I always have the captions on so I can read it. Because it's just like they've muted dialogue too much in things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little worried. I saw someone watch this trailer and go, oh, good. They've got all our favorite colors, gray and fire. Like Pazuzu, the demon who eats colors that everyone has to run their movie by first. If you see, this is a great tweet. I think we're all done with the movie. Isn't there somebody you forgot to ask? Pazuzu, the demon who eats colors. Delicious reds and greens. A feast for Pazuzu. Again, I didn't make up any of that. It was these are tweets I'm all stealing. Pazuzu has had his fill looking at this movie, so I'm a little, it looks a little gray and dull to me. And then people getting like the armor of whoever it is that's attacking them.
Oh, is it historically realistic?
Historically, are those historically accurate satyrs?
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm waiting to see it. I want to like it. Mm-hmm. And then there was Telemachus, Odysseus's son, calls him dad. Should be father.
Yeah, absolutely. This is okay. So this is a problem with a lot of fantasy and sci-fi is they use much too much contemporary dialogue. Yes. It's like you try to watch new Star Trek and it's all just people having like pithy millennial dialogue. You go back and watch Next Gen. It's timeless. It's timeless. This could have been filmed in the 80s or the 70s or whatever. Mm-hmm. The guys on Red Letter Media made this joke where they're like, you don't have Captain Card saying, eat my shorts, you know? Calabunga, dude. Yeah. You don't have that. You don't have that.
That was the problem with the end of Game of Thrones when they ran out of book material to adapt. It was just, the dialogue's so great on that show. And then the end, it's just, they're just, all of a sudden, it's modern dialogue.
That's terrible. That's really frustrating.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I try not to, that's hard as you write fantasy to like not overdo it on like, doth thou...
It's a hard balance to strike, you know? Yeah, because you don't want to have just a bunch of nonsense medievalisms.
Right. But Tolkien is so good at that.
Perfect. It's,
perfect.
Pitch perfect.
Oh, it's all so good. Yeah, I noticed this in... I've complained about this, actually, about the Legend of Zelda games, where in the older games, there's some attempt at that kind of medieval speech. But like in the new games, which I don't like as much, it's, you're going down, Ganondorf. Like, I don't want that.
It's no good.
Hearken to me, Navi. I want that kind of stuff.
Right. Okay, so lack of color, historically inaccurate armor.
Yeah.
But did it otherwise look compelling?
Looked, you know what looked fucking amazing? Hmm. The Whirlpool. Charybdis,
okay.
Scylla and Charybdis. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see Scylla. Scylla is a great monster. In the mountainside, I read Circe last summer. I was in Sicily on vacation. Circe, it's a modern retelling of the Circe myth. Circe's the sea witch that Odysseus encounters. It's like told from her perspective. It's a really good book. It's by the woman who did, she did the song of Achilles. It's a retelling of Achilles' story. It's basically just a gay love story. This is for women, but I actually enjoyed it. And her island is kind of like Sicily, like the passage between Sicily and Italy is this Scylla Charybdis passage where there's this whirlpool that you have to avoid. If you go into the whirlpool, you die. I think in some tellings of Greek myth, there's a monster that summons the whirlpool, or sometimes it just is the whirlpool. And then if you're not too close to the whirlpool, you're going to be too close to this cliff where out of it comes Scylla, which is the, like six-headed hydra with this six or seven mouths that just like you're going to lose six or seven guys because that's how many mouths it has, and it's going to come and just eat them, and it's creepy and gross. I can't wait to see it. Can't wait to see it.
Okay. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
I was always a big fan of the Cyclops.
You like the Cyclops?
Yeah.
Just mind your own business.
Yeah. The sirens I find less. See, this is why I've really gotten into the metal music, right? Yeah. Is because, like, if I hear the siren song, I'm going to be like, oh, this is just like fucking pop bullshit. You know,
that won't tempt you at all.
I would put cork in my ears because I wouldn't want to listen to this.
You don't
want to
hear it.
Yeah. But I don't think I'd be tempted by it.
I'm excited for it. I'm going to see it, but I'm just I have a couple little concerns that I won't be able to see or hear it.
You know, the trick with media is you just have to want to like things, right?
Right. Very, that's why I get conservatives don't want to like things.
They want to bitch about things.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. They want to whine about everything.
Yeah.
It's like, can I just enjoy things? And it's funny that they used to complain about the woke people.
Right.
Can
the we just enjoy woke things? Woke scolds. You remember
can
that
we
term?
Can just enjoy things? Right. Now you're the scoldy. You're being very scolding.
You got just a little bit of cultural power. Yeah. And what are you doing? You're wagging that finger.
I mean, if it's bad, I'll say it's bad. Again, I hated Tenet. Yeah. Hate Tenet. Mm-hmm. I thought.
But not for political reasons.
No.
No.
I liked Oppenheimer. You liked Oppenheimer?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It was pretty good.
It was weird. My complaint.
It went on too long.
It went on too long, and then also
out of order was unnecessary in my view.
Out of order was unnecessary, particularly because the story that bookends,
yeah,
the creation of the atom bomb is a far less interesting story, and so the movie kind of like sets up and pays off seemingly a much more minor episode, yeah,
that,
in his life.
That administrative hearing of. Ooh. Of whether they're going to confirm someone
or
who
whether
had
they're
been
gonna
mean
take
to
away,
him.
Yeah, whether they're whether they're going to confirm a commerce secretary
a
who took away his
drama.
Security clearance.
Right, that was contrived drama.
Complete. Yeah, it's just it was told relatively interestingly, right. But it's just like it's so much less interesting right. than him building the atomic right. bomb and then being racked with guilt
and
about it.
And that part, the again that hearing was full, or as he's prepping for it, the villain. Has so much his chief of staff character or whatever, Alden Ehrenreich. I don't know what his name is. You know who I mean.
Real Heritage American.
He has to do so much telling rather than showing because mm-hmm. he has to just explain why the stakes for this are so high, why right. this is relevant to the rest right. of the story. And he just has to give endless monologues about, no, why we're even showing you this at all. And right. it just does not work.
Right.
And also, I thought it would be just an interesting movie. It was told in chronological order and then instead of it ending with this huge triumph and what he creates, it then kind of peters out at and now he's under suspicion. Right. That would have kind of subverted audience expectations, if you don't know the story,
right.
in an interesting way. It was like the one time that telling things in order would have been perfectly interesting.
Yeah, totally. Or, I mean, yeah, you could have like his, because Oppenheimer was a communist, right? Who yeah. had all sorts of dodgy yeah. connections with communist spies.
But he renounced
spies.
It. I mean, he's interesting.
He did, but it would have been, that would have been kind of interesting if it's like, in a way, it's kind of like, just desserts, right?
Yeah.
All these things that you did when you were young kind of come back to bite you.
Mm-hmm.
And also everyone is kind of now dismissing this huge triumph that you had, right? It's like, who cares that you, or even we're going to condemn you for it, right? We asked you to do this thing because we depended on you and now we're throwing you to the wolves, right? Yeah. But yeah, so it was a flawed movie, but a pretty good one.
Yeah.
A pretty good one. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I always, The Prestige is my favorite Christopher Nolan movie. It's my favorite movie, period.
Yeah, you really can't beat that.
I love that movie so much. Mm-hmm. It, every time I rewatch it, I get something new out of it. It's so dense.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much, how the whole, it's so many points the movie revolves around the secret, there being two of everything and them winking at the idea of doubles. And then when you're confronted earlier in the movie with the horror of what the Hugh Jackman character is doing to himself, but your mind won't even accept it because it's so horrifying, mm-hmm. even though you know that's what he's doing. And then at the end, they show you exactly that is what he's doing. And it's like, because you're unwilling to accept it because it's so odd and so horrifying, but that's what he's doing.
Right. Yeah, I remember when it came out, like me and my twin brother, I would go to work one day, he would stay home and watch The Prestige, and then we'd swap. But you can't do that anymore because you can't support a household
on
just one twin working. They both have to have separate jobs.
Oh, I know. Great film. What other Christopher Nolan movies do you like?
Give me
Inception. Inception.
That was too smart for me. You know, it was,
at one point
it
was maybe overrated.
Dream,
I think it's now underrated.
Yeah, no. So it got it suffered from too much hype, right? Because it was supposed to be this huge mind bending, complicated story, and it really was actually a pretty simple tale, and a good kind of actiony drama. Yeah. And then but then the kind of like basic critique of like, well, this is not that complicated, then became an overwhelming critique of, well, actually this is stupid, and that wasn't really fair.
No, it was clever. It was, and it made you think. Mm-hmm. And the ending was great.
Yep.
Interstellar is, I would say, okay to good.
I've actually never watched Interstellar.
It's basically exactly like Project Hail Mary, but with time travel instead of aliens.
I haven't watched Project Hail Mary either. I read the book.
That one's okay.
I mean the Batman movies.
Those are so great.
Dark Knight is not just the best superhero movie. It's like one of the best movies.
All three are great.
Yes.
That one is great. The third one is, I think, was underrated for a long time and is now getting more appreciation.
It's
because Bane is, I think, so appreciated now by our generation.
It's,
we've quoted him back into popularity.
Right.
You and I have done this
predominantly,
but
single-handedly, double-handedly.
Yeah.
It's tough because the thing that makes the third movie so amazing is the thing that the second movie knocked out of the fucking park, which is just having like an incredibly menacing and compelling villain.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's really kind of hard to top Heath Ledger.
You can't
like
top
you can't,
him.
You can't. He's and so Tom Hardy great. Did his darndest. And
he really gave it his all. He came up with that, that voice. I was listening to him to, he went to Christopher Nolan. He's like, I have this idea for a accent I want to do for the character. I think if it works, it'd be really cool. I think if it doesn't work, it'll ruin the whole movie. Should we try it or not? And, but it was based on like his misreading of Bane's origins.
He came from a Caribbean island, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. But I think he confused the Roma and the Romani or something like that.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly. Whatever. It came out great. Obviously, we love it. It's iconic.
Yeah.
It's so iconic.
Yeah, movies.
Christopher Nolan could have made it easier to understand him, but fine.
Oh, well. It's interesting just like what a collaborative process movies are and like where like genius in a film can come from. Because like without the Bane voice, like the movie would have been great, right? But that just kicks it to a next level, right?
Yeah.
The actor's performance of the material put in front of them just like elevates the experience, right?
They're politically interesting films too.
Well, they're very conservative, right?
The second one has a war on terror analogy. The second one has is not, I think, an affront to libertarianism necessarily, because Batman grapples with how much surveillance should be necessary and whether this is good.
It's almost orthogonal to libertarian concerns because it's kind of nihilist anarchists versus corrupt institutions.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And someone, you know, Batman is trying to both be a force for order, which presents some libertarian complications.
Yeah.
While also understanding that the forces he is protecting are themselves often corrupt.
In the third one, it's just fascism versus socialism.
And the fascists are good.
Are the good guys. That is the most reactionary movie ever made.
Yeah, absolutely. After Triumph of the Whale, probably. Yeah,
it's amazing to watch something so reactionary be so popular.
Tell me if you think this is a fair critique. I think my biggest criticism, and I hesitate to even say it because I love these movies, my biggest criticisms of Dark Knight Rises is they're just a little too busy, right? There's a lot of plot that happens really fast, right? And so it's like, you don't dwell on some of the interesting mystery elements of it because you don't really have time. And it's easy to get kind of confused, right? So like in The Dark Knight, you know, there's like the sequence where they like find like he finds a bullet in the wall, and then they like, you know, piece it back together, and they find a thumbprint, which leads them to an apartment. And then he like looks out at them, you know, it's like, wait, what is happening here?
They try to do the Batman as a detective.
Right. But they don't have time for it. Right. Yeah. And I mean, they're excellent films, but it's like with that much plot, you almost kind of wished it was like a little bit more maybe of like a miniseries kind of thing.
Criticism would be the fighting. There's the punching that Batman does is often quite close up, and I can't.
I
like to appreciate good fight choreography, but it's dark. It's because it probably wouldn't make a lot of, you know, at the end of the day, this guy is, you know, is surprising people in some ninja-like way, but also is this giant menacing presence with a cape, and then beating them up in close hand-to-hand, and they can't shoot him, and it's because it actually wouldn't hold up, this kind of action. They must show it to you in a dark and claustrophobic way, so you don't go, wait, how did a guy just jump down and take out that guy, but there's six guys and no one shot him.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
and
what
it
I mean?
Also, the movies, because they're trying to play it so straight and be so serious.
Right.
If you had a lot of like wide shots of a guy in a bat costume beating people up, it would look kind of ridiculous.
Right.
Right. So I think that is also the struggle there.
I mean, they joke about this in the third way, Catwoman. Shoots Bane.
Yeah, right.
Your opposition to guns. I don't know if I feel about it as strongly as you do. It's kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're great movies. I like the moral dilemma. We were just talking about with the hantavirus thing.
Mm-hmm.
The moral dilemma in The Dark Knight that the Joker sets up with the two fairies, one with the prisoners, and should they blow each other up, is great. I think that's a great culmination for that movie. And it actually it is well paid off by by both the bad guys and the citizens
deciding they don't want
to deciding
kill
him. Not mm-hmm. to play his stupid game
yeah.
and not to be have that blood on their hands
mm-hmm.
and that is almost the moral triumph over the Joker is actually done by the citizens of Gotham.
Yeah.
And it's a well pulled off beat.
Because
it feels because you watch them struggle with
right.
it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You think maybe they're gonna do it and they think maybe they're gonna do it. It feels very real and earned when they decide not to do
and
it.
And I mean that would be the Joker's victory, is that like everyone succumbs to nihilism right. and self interest.
But at
right?
the end they just don't.
They don't. They stand they stand up their moral principles
yeah.
and yeah.
And that's his
and they,
ultimate
defeat. They disprove him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. yeah. That's good movies. The Smart. Only other one I wanted to comment on is Memento. Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
Oh, that's one you should watch.
Okay.
That's like Christopher Nolan's one of his I think his earliest well-known movie with Guy Pearce. Mm-hmm. It's the memory loss one.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The guy has memory he can only remember what's going on for a few minutes, but it is told like backwards and based on his memories. It's a little mystery to figure out why he was in the situation where he killed this person.
Mm.
It is great.
Mm-hmm.
It is really, really, really good. No one could watch this movie and dislike it. I would suggest watching it.
Okay.
You will like
I'll give it a go.
You will like it a lot.
I'll give it a go. I'll try to dislike it and see if I can.
Yeah. What else? What else should we? Oh, you had me write down an interesting series of words. Before we started, you said, Robbie, write down Kyle Rittenhouse spider.
Yes.
Why was that?
Yes. So I don't know if you saw this, but Kyle Rittenhouse posted on his X account.
That's the guy from the thing.
Yes.
I know what he's from.
Okay. Yeah. Should we remind the listeners?
Should we? He was involved in altercation with Black Lives Matter protesters. He brought a gun to go defend property owners
in Kenosha, Wisconsin
during the looting and rioting period.
Yes,
and
was attacked during the
he
riot.
He was attacked,
defended himself,
and then was put on trial
and was acquitted.
And was acquitted. And I agree with the decision to acquit him.
I'm glad he was acquitted
based on the evidence provided.
I think it's reasonable to say you shouldn't have, you know, as a 17, 18 year old,
right.
put yourself in such a volatile situation.
But it's not illegal to do so.
It's not illegal to do so.
If you attack someone with a gun, they can shoot you.
Yes. Well, he was attacked again. I'm sad to say, by a brown recluse spider.
Brown.
Yeah. Curious. Yeah. And so he was, so he's been in the hospital. And,
really?
But yes. Yeah. They're
a spider?
They're venomous. Yeah.
That's like my nightmare.
Spiders?
I hate spiders. I'm afraid of spiders. I have arachnophobia. That's my phobia of spiders. Like them.
See, I don't. I'm not afraid of spiders.
Really?
I don't
like bugs at all.
I find bugs gross. Cockroaches are disgusting.
Absolutely disgusting. Well,
absolutely
you lived with
disgusting.
Them, so you got to know
them
so
do.
Intimately. Yeah,
yeah, right. And it's the familiarity is only bred content. it's politically relevant, the spider bite, because NBC put out, they wrote it up, and they put out a tweet, which was like, Kyle Rittenhouse, who shot three people at a civil rights rally, has been bitten by a venomous spider. So everyone was dunking on this.
Oh, my God.
My own comment was, I'm surprised they didn't describe the spider as a father of thousands.
Yeah, the misinformation about that whole thing is just so not, because people to this day in mainstream media circles will say that he shot all the three people he shot were white people.
All
they were not black
people.
One of the people who was shot said on the stand that he had described coming at Kyle Rittenhouse in a threatening way
with a drawn weapon.
So.
Yes.
People just didn't like. I like everyone. If you naively just heard what had happened, you're like, yeah, he probably did something illegal, probably. But then when it was walked through, Ian, who works here at Reason, walked mm-hmm. me through it, and I'm like, oh, I guess he was defending himself, and they correctly.
Oh, absolutely.
Decided
so
was,
yeah, the first person he shot was a psychotic homeless pedophile who attacks him.
Right.
And
right.
he shoots him.
There was that too.
And then after shooting him, he tries to run away and then is attacked by another man who happened to be a domestic abuser, shoots him. And then this third guy, who's a member of one of these like communist militias, draws his weapon, is approaching Kyle Rittenhouse, and Kyle Rittenhouse shoots him in the arm. So
yeah.
he was justly acquitted.
Yeah.
And was slandered in the media.
He was.
But I mean, it's just another episode of like peak woke. You just forget how bad that stuff went.
Peak woke.
Yeah.
Remember the Lincoln Memorial kids, Covington?
Yeah,
my
I do.
My big coup.
Big scoop.
That was a fun time.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I can talk about this. Yeah, so I was down on the National Mall yesterday, gone for a jog. And as I'm trying to jog, kind of like, you know, basically I live north of the mall. So I'm coming down and then my normal route is I take a right heading west towards the Lincoln Memorial. Mm-hmm. As I'm doing this, like all these federal, you know, DEA agents and National Guard are like showing up on the path and telling everyone to get across the street. So I'm trying to run around them. And the further I go, the wider the cordon gets. And so I have to take this big, big loop around. Ran a lot longer than I was hoping. It's probably it's good for me. But and the reason for this, the reason that they shut down the entire western half of the mall where the Lincoln Memorial and the Washington Monument are, was because Donald Trump wanted to drive his motorcade through the dry reflecting pool that they've drained to clean.
What?
Yes. Yeah.
What?
He wanted to go on a little joyride. And so they had to exclude everyone from one of the nation's premier public parks. Yeah.
That is annoying.
It is incredibly annoying. And it was a very dicey moment where there was some park police on their giant horses, right? Enforcing the cordon.
Oh, I love their horses.
No. Monsters.
No.
Well, just wait for it. This guy, this older gentleman, was walking his dog, had his headphones in, and like got too close to the horses, and his dog like is jumping at the horse, like underneath the horse's hooves.
Oh, they're gonna kick you.
Well, the police just like immediately like, you know, grabbed him and were like, you know, yelling at him, like, you know, show us your ID, you're getting arrested.
Oh.
I didn't stick around to see what happened. It was just, it's just another reminder.
You, like, a libertarian journalist, didn't jump into action.
I should have been like, yeah, no, because that would have been really good for me to like get up into the giant, you know, horse cops' faces with my phone, right?
You know what though? I don't want to side with the cops, but I do want to side with the horse. And people who walk their dogs and listen and like have headphones in are totally oblivious to what's going on.
I understand.
Annoy the shit out of me.
I understand.
So, you know what? Spend some time with your dog. Enjoy your dog. Walk your dog. Pay attention to your surroundings. I hate when they act like I've snuck up on them when I'm trying to like scoot or jog past them. Like, you know what? Take your fucking headphones out and have some spatial awareness then.
Yeah.
Do you need distraction at every second? You know, you're walking, doom scrolling as you're. Just enjoy the outdoors. Enjoy the scenery. Put a screen down or mute. You don't need stimulation at every second of every day.
Unless
put it down.
Unless you're listening to Freed Up, you don't. You
right.
Don't, yeah. You
you're
don't
listening
have
to Freed Up. That should
okay.
be the background of your day at all times. You should go through past episodes. A lot of hours of content you can hear.
We got a healthy archive at this point.
Yes.
It's lasted a long time. Longer than either of us ever expected this thing to last.
I'm always starting new ventures, podcasts, new projects.
We talked about anti-discrimination law long enough that that was probably our last episode.
The plight of the white male.
Yeah.
No, that's...
You know who... People don't talk about that.
They don't?
Yeah.
Speaking of white males, is there something you wanted to say about Jesus?
Hmm? Oh. Yeah, well, I was talking to our producer, Cody, earlier. You know, we were defending billionaires and their just gains, right?
Yes,
but then we were like, well, you know, there's the Christian kind of...
there's the Christian.
Prohibition on
wealth,
great wealth, right?
It is easier to pass through the eye of a needle.
For a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get into heaven.
That's pretty specific.
Yeah, but then you have the other parable of the talents, right? Mm. Which is what kind of more free market Catholics and Christians will point to sometime.
Right, I resolve this by just not believing in it, but what do you do?
Yeah, that's easier. That's easier. Yeah, so the parable of the talents, if you recall, was the servants are given, you know, the master gives his servants some, you know, a couple talents, you know, units of currency at the time to go and, you know, invest and multiply. And one of the servants, he's afraid he's going to lose it, so he just buries it in the ground.
Yes,
and the other one like turns it over once, and then the other one makes
a
great
vineyard
gains,
or something.
Right? What's that?
Is it a vineyard?
No, I think that's a separate one.
I feel like there was a vineyard in this. Oh, that's the one with the son. He gives it to
son,
his sons.
Right.
Okay,
yeah. And then the tenants, they don't pay the landlord. Then he sends his son and the son is killed, and kind of foreshadowing Christ's own sacrifice.
Oh.
But that's a separate parable. That doesn't have much to do with capitalism, I don't think. Unless, you know, it's maybe a criticism of eviction moratoriums.
Mm-hmm.
But So clearly there's also a, you know, a biblical encouragement to go and make productive use of the things given to you by God, right? Mm. And capitalism does that, right? It allows you to benefit the common good, right? By the great creation of wealth, right? So no, I don't think billionaires are automatically going to hell. It's just like, what do you do with the billions that you've made, right? Do you use it to benefit the common good, or is it just for your own pleasure and, you know, enjoyment, right? So Jeffrey Epstein probably not going to, you never know.
His suicide note came out this week. Did you see that? Does that make you more suspicious that it's a setup? Because it felt a little convenient too at this late date to be like, oh yeah, here's the suicide note.
It was such weird circumstances under which it came out.
Right.
Did you follow this at all? So he was, so his cellmate, was a former police officer convicted of a quadruple murder, horrible murder.
Yeah.
Basically killing, he was a drug dealer.
Yeah.
Killed a guy, killed multiple people who he claimed had ripped him off in some sort of drug deal. Sharing a cell with Jeffrey Epstein. Jeffrey Epstein allegedly tried to kill himself once, you know, hang himself.
And he said this guy tried to kill him.
Yes. That's what he claimed afterward, right? Yeah. And then this guy found allegedly a suicide note left by Jeffrey Epstein, and then became part of his criminal case and was sealed as part of his criminal case. So no one had seen the note up until recently because the DOJ hadn't seen it. At least that's what they told the New York Times. The press hadn't seen it, whatever. And then eventually everyone agreed to unseal it. It did sound rather Jeffrey Epstein-like.
Well, it contains phrases he uses in emails.
Yes.
And then but also the FBI already had those emails.
It's also riddled with spelling errors. So
the FBI has access to those emails. They could...
Yeah, but they didn't have access to the note because the court had sealed it.
Right.
And it wasn't available to the DOJ, I guess. But so, I mean, I don't know. I buy it, I guess. It makes sense. It makes complete sense to me that Jeffrey Epstein would commit suicide.
I know. I always say that too. People don't like to hear that, but actually, like pedophiles do commit suicide when awaiting trial.
Yeah.
Because
also just like you... Like
it's over.
He knows he's done.
You're done.
He's gone from he.
You got away with it once.
He beat the rap once.
Yeah, it's done.
He knows the walls.
Now they're really they were bringing federal power to deal with him.
Some big boy charges.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're gonna go from being a wealthy billionaire to spending the rest of your life.
Yeah, no sweetheart plea deal this time. So.
No. So it makes complete sense to me. And also there's this thing that happens I think sometimes too where people are exposed to the inhumanity of the American prison system for the first time and assume there's some grand conspiracy theory when it's just like, no, this is just the typical amount of incompetence and neglect that everyone is treated with.
Every time someone says to me, I just don't believe it that this is such a high profile person and what the guards weren't checking in on him.
Of course they weren't.
Of course they weren't. You don't understand how much they don't give a shit. They're not paid well. They were not doing their jobs because they're bad at them. That is the normal, typical behavior of people who work at prisons, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because it's an unsympathetic class of people to give better services to.
Yep.
So we don't spend a lot of money and effort making their lives better, checking up on their welfare.
Yep.
There is no constituency, sadly, to improve the welfare of people in prison.
Right.
And so they get of course the camera wasn't working. Of course the guards were like, you know, getting drunk and playing cards or I don't know what they were doing. But they weren't, they're supposed to check on him every 15 minutes. Can you believe, knowing how important this case was to me, the Jeffrey Epstein obsessee, that they weren't checking up on him?
Yeah.
They don't care.
Right.
They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
They're indifferent to what happens to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a real, there's people who get that and people who don't. But why? What? But I care about it. I just don't believe they wouldn't check on him.
Right.
Oh, honey.
This is what's so frustrating about conspiracy theories generally is like there's a huge amount of scandal happening every day in the government and you're choosing to focus on the one like rich guy that gets jammed up, right? Yeah, come on.
That's how it goes.
Yeah.
All right, we got anything else? I wrote down some other things. I wrote down the roof. I don't know what I had to say about the roof. You said I'm just writing down random like children's toys or
what? Oh, that was last week when we castles, had both castles and pirates, and so yeah. I assumed you're on some sort of Fisher Price kick. Did you have any of those as a kid? What? Like the little like plastic knights? And
oh
a big
yeah,
castle?
The castle one is mm-hmm. great. I had a turtle sandbox in the backyard, and the castle went in the sandbox. Eventually, and those little knights, and you press a button, and he's wielding his yes, ball and chain, right? And his sword. Those are great.
Oh, hey, speaking of Greek myths, you know what I had? I got for one of my birthdays was a little Trojan horse. Yes, and you pressed a little button, and the horse's head moved up and down like a giant hammer.
Oh,
yeah, it was pretty cool.
Those were good. Cool. Yeah, that Fisher Price castle thing. I know exactly. There was a pirate one too. I didn't have that one, but the castle.
I did have the pirate ship as well.
That was a classic.
Like we were talking about wealth disparities earlier. This is how you learn relative status in modern America, is you go over to your friend's house and you see if they had more or fewer Fisher Price toys than you did.
Right.
Or if they had like the good Legos. Right. You know, maybe you just had the blocks, but then they have all the like Star Wars pieces and right. everything. Man.
My wealthier like extended family cousins, they always had the new video game system and like
yeah,
every
game, consoles,
game that
yeah.
had come out for. They're like, oh yeah, we haven't played that one yet. I'm like, you haven't played it yet. Jesus. Yeah. And one of them had like a bed, like a race car bed.
Oh,
do you remember,
boy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's when,
man.
Yeah. I was envious of that.
Yeah. You didn't have your, yeah, they weren't able to fit the race car bed in the little cupboard under the stairs that you grew up in.
Exactly. Yeah. The rodent infested, right. Picking up that hantavirus and having those cockroaches. Yeah. Yeah. But, and also the joy of childhood is playing with toys in ways that they were never meant to be played. Like, you know, I didn't play Castle very much. I used those characters for a bunch of other stories. And we were always, my brother and I were always trying to fashion, you know, play like plastic weapons, swords and lightsabers into more different weapons. Mm-hmm. Right. The Transformers type things mm-hmm. always is of great interest to mm-hmm. young boys, mm-hmm. which myself as well. The mm-hmm. it morphs from a Power Rangers. It morphs from a person into a giant mech suit. Love giant those giant
the power
mech suits.
The power of imagination.
That's
you
great.
Know,
it's beautiful.
Child. Yeah,
I love
I was,
all that stuff.
I used to, as a, you know, when I was like 5 and 6, we lived in Northern Virginia. And so I was, my dad would take me to a lot of like reenactments where you could buy, you know, like plastic soldiers, right?
Oh. And so and I was here's always where the Lincoln's War of Aggression.
Yeah, right, exactly. I was always yeah, I was always making you know, I had the War of Northern Aggression book, the Civil War book, and I would always like assemble my soldiers like the little battle maps that they had. And so it was
beautiful
for me.
Beautiful.
Did you ever paint model soldiers as a kid?
No. Nope.
That was a good memory. Me and my father
painted model soldiers.
Model soldiers, yeah. Napoleonic era, Civil War era.
Love that.
It was great. It was great. I would like to get back into it as an adult, you know, because I really enjoyed it. But you know, it was my birthday the other day as a 33-year-old man. If I started painting model soldiers again, it's just like, all right.
You need a son for that.
Yeah, no.
It's done.
Yeah. Right.
I was talking with someone about Waterloo is such a great battle. Mm. It's just the greatest battle ever because it was kind of close. Napoleon could have won that and everything would have been very different.
I think he still would have been crushed eventually.
You think so?
Yeah, totally. It was a real long shot, those 100 days.
Yeah, yeah, but he could have won. It was close.
He would have made him really work for it.
It was going to
make
him
really work for it.
And it has like the dramatic, it has the, you know, Riders of Rohan showing up at Helm's Deep kind of thing when Blücher and the Germans appear in the nick of time to save the day. Mm-hmm. It's a good, you couldn't have scripted that one more perfectly.
And there's just like, there's all these like, it's just so even run because there's all these set pieces, right?
Yes,
it's like
the cavalry set piece, the take that hill set piece.
Capturing the center.
Yes.
They get pushed back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's great. Also with two people, you know, Napoleon and Wellington, you know, you talk a lot about like, in the Civil War, you know, the grudging respect, not even grudging, the true respect that that Grant felt for Lee. You know, they had fought in the Mexican War decades ago. It was a real appreciation for each other. Wellington and Napoleon by that point, did not like each other. They were very sick of this and wanted to capture the other. Mm-hmm. And it was not really even a grudging respect. It was this guy again. Well, it was rivalry.
Blücher wanted to, if he captured Napoleon on the battlefield, he would have just executed him.
Right. When they went to Paris after the battle, Blücher insisted on blowing up a bridge just because they hated the French. And they were like, Wellington schemed it so they could blow up some bridge that wasn't going to hurt anyone or affect anything. And I think they just like damaged their own forces or something. But just like, Wellington, I must blow up some bridge.
Do you have a favorite general from history?
Favorite general overall? That's an interesting question. Well, I love Chinese history, the Three Kingdoms period so much. So I love Zhou Yu, who is was the commander of the Wu forces during the Battle of the Red Cliffs, where they beat back Cao Cao. And in the novel, it's because the shaman changes the direction of the wind. Mm-hmm. But I love so many figures from that. But Zhou Yu is the commander of the Allied forces, and he's a musician. Hmm. And he plays instruments, and he's great.
A poetic warrior.
Yes, he's a poet warrior. How about you?
I think it's got to be Hannibal.
Hannibal.
Just I mean, you can criticize his strategic vision. I feel like maybe he was stabbed in the back on the home front.
Mm-hmm.
But just like you pull off three insane tactical victories, boom, 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 right in a row against the best armies in the world, with this cobbled together ridiculous force, right, of people who aren't even from your own city. Like, you have no military to go to. You have to rely on a bunch of mercenaries and barbarians, and he makes it work with a
pretty
lot of
awesome.
Like trickery, because like most battles, even like smart generals, a Caesar or an Alexander, like they're excellent generals, but
there's not
like
so much you can,
insane
the bigger force
tactical
wins.
Brilliance, right? Just like I have the better troops and the slightly better.
I mean, there's tactical
decision.
Innovations, like when they innovate the phalanx formation, right?
Right.
That,
yeah, we're gonna
then
have
they're
gonna
longer win for a while,
spears,
but then everybody
and,
else figures that out, and it's back to whoever has the bigger force. Wins.
But to have just like insane tactics that no one has ever used before and will never be able to successfully pull off again. Like, I think that speaks to his own particular brilliance in that moment. So
that's good stuff.
I find that much more. Do you have any, you read about the Punic Wars, do you ever feel bad for the Carthaginians? Like,
Oh, screw the Spartans.
Yeah. Fuck the Spartans,
no.
Right? Yeah, sure.
And when I watch that awful 300 movie, I'm like, these are the good guys.
These, like,
I side
fascist monsters.
Yeah, these are fascists. I side with the cool, sexually fluid, invading. Obviously, I would. No, these are my kinds of guys.
Right.
Yeah. Kinds of guys and girls and something in between.
Yeah, the hordes of androgynous orcs.
Yeah, seems fine to me. Right. Yeah, I like the Spartans that much.
I like the Carthaginians as like a, they were all about making money. They were a mercantile empire, right? And I respect that. They did do a lot of child sacrifice, which is
That's no bueno.
So I guess at the end of the day,
there was awesome child sacrifice. It's not like Aztec level child sacrifice, was it?
I think it was pretty bad.
We don't like that.
In the historiography for a long time, there was
the Greeks
debate.
Do child sacrifice at the beginning of the whole the Iliad.
Yeah.
They Agamemnon sacrifices his daughter, in certain tellings at least of the Iliad, in a way that offends Artemis, I believe. And in some versions of the Iliad, the Odyssey, he returns, and when Agamemnon returns home at the end of the war, his wife has not forgiven him for this, and she gets her lover to assassinate him for that.
Very good. A little bit of justice.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't hang himself.
And actually, I think he's sleeping with Cassandra at the time. So she gets assassinated too. And she's got to be like, fuck my luck. I'm being killed because I've been taken as a slave after losing in war. And all of this I saw and tried to warn people about and was not listened to.
No one will listen to. Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah, I just... I'm kind of down on the Romans. I find them to be
down
a kind
on the
of,
Romans.
Yeah, they are kind of a genocidal empire, right?
I mean, all empires are kind of.
Yeah, but like, the Carthaginian. I mean, yeah, they really fucked up Spain, but they were about trading and making money, right?
Yeah.
Whereas the Romans were just like, we were going to seize territory. And
I like
people.
Roman successor states more. Hmm. I love Charlemagne. Mm-hmm. Charlemagne is a historical figure. I love. I that's an impressive kind of general impressive as a military person,
yeah, sure,
but
sure.
as a political leader, yeah. to pull all those people together and found a stable kingdom that's like part of France and part of Germany and call it Rome and get the Pope's blood. That was a impressive series of events for the time, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. Not anybody could have pulled. This is all great man stuff. Like one in a zillion people could have pulled that off.
He earned Charlemagne the Great. He earned.
He
earned the epitaph.
He earned it. Yeah. These are squabbling bands of peasant hordes and militias, and he turned it into a pretty good kingdom.
Okay.
Yeah. I like all the Roman successor states. I like the idea that hundreds of years later, they're still trying to, you know, create a kingdom and call it Rome, even though it's not part of Rome. And
yeah, I always like the Byzantines.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
I guess the trend now
they're
is
a
just call
busy
them.
Yeah. Oh,
for very
me.
Good. Yeah. I guess the trend now is just call them the Romans, which
just
is kind of
the Romans.
Kind of cool, right? If you think about how long this you know empire lasted, then right?
You know what the true successor to Rome is? Hmm. The United States of America.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a great chart, a meme I saw one day. Maybe I can get.
I was right, like structural formalism.
Yes,
right.
For the successor to Rome.
Right.
And if you're a doctrine radical, structure radical.
Right. It's either
it's
the Vatican or America.
yeah. Right. Good stuff.
Well, now that we have an American Pope, it's like.
Hey, now.
We're
there
back.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
We're back, baby.
Yeah.
All right. Let's leave it there.
Okay. Very good.
Sounds good. See you guys next week.